As I mentioned before, there are three main types of resources for the real estate investor: sources of information, businesses, and people. Sources of information include the publication and places you can go in order to seek out information on your own, like the courthouse and the internet. Business resources are the companies that you'll use, for example, to buy, improve, maintain, or manage the properties you have. People resources are the professional, business, and personal contacts who can help you in your career. They can be helpful either because of what they know or the official position that they occupy, their ability to partner with you to invest in property, their profession, or even just their willingness to keep their eyes and ears open for properties you might want to purchase. Let me briefly describe each one. Your three primary sources of information are publications, offices of public records, and the internet. Publications, especially local publications like newspapers, can provide a wealth of information about available opportunities for you as an investor. So can offices of public records, where you'll find, for example, a physical description of any property, its assessed value, the taxes, mortgages or other liens that may exist, and other ownership information. And finally, the internet, of course, which is a virtually limitless source of information. Your business resources are those property and contract services that you're likely to use not only when buying and selling property, but when you're improving, maintaining, and managing your properties as well. Such resources can include management companies, property rental companies, and title insurance companies. Some of the people at these companies can also serve formally or informally, as a friend might serve, as advisors that you can use as part of your investment team. To find them, simply ask around, make a few phone calls, and visit their places of business. Often, if you develop a relationship with one of them, that individual will go out of his or her way to help you. Building service companies can also serve as business resources. In fact, building suppliers will often extend a trade discount to you if you represent yourself as a real estate investor. They'll do so because they'll want to gain and retain your business. With regard to management companies, let me say that when you're starting out investing in income property, you should consider managing your own properties, not so much to save the management fee, but to give yourself the hands-on experience of doing so. The day will come, however, when you feel you have enough hands-on experience and you realize that you can make more money with your mind, for example, coming up with creative ways to buy property, than you can with your hands. It's then that you will need a good management company. To prepare for that event, you should begin immediately to look for, interview, and develop a relationship with several property management companies. You will find some immediate benefits in doing this. You see, management companies are attuned to the marketplace. They know rental rates, they know vacancy rates, and the best and poorest locations in which to own rental properties. They also know which properties are on the market. Through skillful questioning, you can gather a lot of information about your local marketplace. Find these management companies through other investors or just by referring to the Yellow Pages. Management companies tend to specialize in certain types of properties: industrial, commercial, multi-unit, or single-family homes. The purpose of a property rental company is to find tenants. Some property rental companies represent the tenant and are paid by the tenant. Others are paid by the landlord. I've never found property rental companies to be particularly useful in locating tenants, at least for me. Perhaps it has only been because there have been few, if any, well-run firms in the areas where I've operated. In some areas of the country, these companies play a major role in filling vacancies and acting as clearinghouses between tenants and landlords. Regardless, you should seek out these companies in your area. Find out how they operate, by whom they're paid, and once they're given a vacancy to fill, how long it will take on average to fill it. As in the case of management companies, they can be sources of useful information pertaining to local rents and vacancy rates, which areas are most and least attractive to tenants, and why they are or are not attractive, for example, because of school districts, shopping, recreation, commuter access, and prestige. They can also be sources of information about properties that are for sale. You should start right now to look for a title insurance company that you can do business with, even if you feel that it might be some time before you buy your first property. Like attorneys who handle closings, title companies assume the responsibility for checking the title when a property is bought or sold to determine if any ownership problems or defects in the title exist. They prepare some of the closing paperwork, verify any mortgage balances or other outstanding obligations like taxes and association fees. They provide title insurance, and in most cases handle the closing and disperse funds. Whether you're buying or selling real estate, you can use a title company or a lawyer to ensure that things are in order. Never buy a property without obtaining title insurance. The rates charged by title companies may differ, so shop around for the best price. The rates are usually tied to the amount being insured and are often negotiable. You might be able to obtain reduced rate insurance if you provide the company with a substantial amount of business. In addition to the information and business resources I just described, you should also develop people resources that will help you in your career. If you're like most real estate investors and entrepreneurs, you are by nature self-reliant, you're industrious and independent, and you might find yourself becoming even more so as you get more and more excited about the opportunities in the real estate investing field. But one of the drawbacks of being an entrepreneur is that most entrepreneurs hate to rely on other people, preferring instead to be self-sufficient and do everything themselves. If you have that attitude now, you should try to change it. In countless conversations I've had with self-made millionaires, they all say, "I couldn't have done it by myself. I needed the help of others." When I ask why it's that way, I usually hear three reasons. First, there are only so many hours in the day, and they just didn't have time to accomplish all the things that had to be done and get where they wanted to get financially. Second, success is not achieved alone. Like a good coach, they needed to direct the activities of a team to achieve results. After all, a combined effort is greater than the sum of the individual efforts. And finally, they just did not have the need, desire, or even the ability to become an expert in all areas. They tell me that's why there are experts in every area, and that's how they make their living. Consult them. Over time, I've learned these lessons myself, many times the hard and expensive way. Now I know better, and so should you. There is no reason to make expensive mistakes because you had no advice or received bad advice. On the other hand, there is certainly no reason for you to stunt your financial growth by trying to learn and do everything yourself. Instead of planning to do everything yourself, you should think of people who can help you. Ask around and compile a list of those you feel you can trust. Then, as your investing career blossoms, continually revisit and revise the list, adding new contacts and purging the list of others that are not working. Think of yourself as managing an investment team that consists of professionals, business contacts, and personal contacts. Your investment team should consist of people from many different professions. Here are some that I think are perhaps the most important: accountants, appraisers, attorneys, bankers, property inspectors, insurance agents, real estate brokers, and surveyors. Let's talk about them one at a time. A number of years ago, I moved my base of operations to a city some 250 miles from my previous location. When I did, I immediately proceeded to search for a new Certified Public Accountant, or CPA, which is the highest designation an accountant can have. A friend of mine who lived in the area suggested an accountant who was not a CPA, but who was, according to my friend's information, both creative and competent. I interviewed the man, and to make a long story short, after all these years, he's still my accountant. Even though you might not feel the need for a CPA or an accountant early in your career, and possibly prefer to do your own income tax returns, let me suggest that you find one before too long. For one thing, you might need expert advice about taxes from time to time. Then eventually, you should turn over the burdensome and, in my opinion, unproductive job of filing your tax returns to a CPA or an accountant. They can be an important part of your investing career, and this is true not only in your real estate acquisitions and sales, but in your business organization as well. To find an accountant, ask other investors. Ask bankers and lawyers in your area for recommendations. And after developing a list of four or five names, call each one and ask for 15 minutes of his or her time to discuss background, experience, philosophy, whether they're conservative or aggressive, and fees. And don't hesitate to ask accountants for referrals and interview the referrals in person or by telephone. Let's talk now about appraisers. I'll be the first to admit that I only use appraisers when I'm required to do so by a bank or another lender. But when I do have to use them, because most banks have an approved list of five or six appraisers, I know who to go to, what to say, and what to expect. This might come as a surprise to you, but if you're the least bit savvy about real estate and how to do a financial analysis, you can actually lead an appraiser to the figure you have in mind for the value of the property. A surprise, I'll bet. For example, once I was having an apartment building appraised for refinancing purposes, and my analysis indicated that the building should be valued at $450,000. I presented my analysis to the appraiser, and I said, "Based on this analysis, I believe my building has a value of about $450,000. Before you start your own analysis, if you think you'll have a hard time coming in at about that value, please call me." Well, the appraiser came back with an appraisal value of $446,000. As a matter of fact, he took $5,000 off for some maintenance work that was needed. Otherwise, it would have been $451,000. In the dozens of appraisals I've contracted for and which I've participated, I've actually had two appraisers tell me, in one case, he said, "I appreciate your giving me your estimate of value." And in another case, appraiser said, "Thank you for telling me the figure you were looking for." These are verbatim quotes, and it's not unreasonable to believe that the other appraisers felt the same way, but thought it might be unprofessional to tell me. Whenever a lending institution requires you to have an appraisal made in connection with a purchase, ask for their list of approved appraisers. Also ask whether a full narrative appraisal is required or whether a short-form appraisal will suffice. And keep in mind that online appraisal information is available at my website, carltonsheets.com. Once you receive the list of appraisers, call each one and ask for a quote to do the job. Once you have the lowest bid, seek to reduce it further. Then do your own analysis and use the technique I just described. By doing so, you'll be taking advantage of more than 30 years of investing that it took me to learn this strategy. Now, attorneys. An attorney can draw up legal contracts and give you advice on all the legal aspects of a contract before you sign it. Some attorneys issue title insurance, handle closings, and represent you in litigation, whether you're the plaintiff, that is the one suing, or the defendant, the one being sued. To search for an attorney, ask other investors in your area which attorneys they use. Contact real estate brokers or agents and talk to title companies to get their recommendations. When you start hearing the name of one attorney repeatedly, you will probably have found an individual with whom you can work. Try to find one with a background in real estate who can offer competent legal and business advice. And beyond that, look for someone creative, someone who will look for ways to make something work rather than the reasons it won't work. If you're ever sued or threatened with a lawsuit, you'll need an attorney to represent you, and it probably won't be the same attorney who handles your real estate closings. So what do you do? If you need a good trial attorney, ask your real estate attorney for recommendations. If you're contemplating bringing suit against someone, for example, a tenant or a building contractor, use an attorney from the very start. You might find that you can save a considerable amount of money merely by writing a letter and having an attorney send it on his or her stationery. If you're a regular client of an attorney, he or she might even do this for free or for a nominal charge. Now, bankers. Building a relationship with a banker should be an important part of your overall game plan. You can look to the banker to provide you with information on local building trends, current and projected interest rates, vacancy rates, and new financing programs and ideas. The more you deal with a banker, the more your relationship with him or her will grow. Although you can buy properties no money down with bad or no credit and no cash, you cannot become truly wealthy without having a banker or two on your side. While everyone has a different idea of what it means to be truly wealthy, I don't believe you can develop a $2 million net worth, for example, with a cash flow of $25,000 to $30,000 a month without the help of a banker. It's not difficult to find a banker. If you follow the procedures for improving your credit that I describe in the chapter on establishing and improving your credit, you will meet several bankers and possibly become friendly with them. Here's another opportunity. You can pre-qualify for a mortgage loan. Find creative no-down payment loan programs and even apply for a mortgage by accessing my real estate financial services online at SheetsCoach.com or CarltonSheets.com. Property inspectors. Property inspectors are trained to examine all parts of a building to determine if any defects or potential defects exist. They look at basements, foundations, structural members, plumbing, roof supports, the roof itself, and generally any equipment on the property, including alarm systems, elevators, boilers and heating systems, kitchen appliances, and air conditioning units. When they complete their inspections, they identify deficiencies and recommend the types of repairs that may be needed, if any. If you purchase a multi-unit property, especially if it's more than 8 units, and you're using institutional financing, you will almost always be required to use a building inspector. The cost for an inspector varies by region. Some states require property inspectors to be licensed. Others don't. In Florida, for example, property inspectors must be licensed. I'm of the opinion that licensing requirements tend to attract better trained and educated people to the profession. Many property inspectors in Florida are engineers, although this certainly is not a requirement and is not even necessarily indicative of competence. Let's talk now about insurance agents. Insurance agents are very important to real estate investors, especially due to the large number of natural disasters that have occurred in the United States over the last several decades. This has resulted in many insurance companies raising their rates or even declining to write insurance. Some insurance agents are direct employees of the insurance companies whose insurance they sell, while others are independent brokers that deal with many companies. To find a good insurance agent, ask real estate agents and other investors in your area for referrals. You can also seek out and compare insurance companies, obtain quotes, and even apply for insurance online at my website, carltonsheets.com. When you do buy insurance for your properties, make sure that they're covered during periods of vacancy. And now, real estate brokers and agents. Real estate brokers and agents specialize just like members of all other professions. Some real estate brokers and agents tend to deal with leases, some with commercial properties, some with vacant land, some with residential properties such as large apartment buildings, and others with single-family homes. With such a diverse range of brokers and agents available, you must make sure you find someone who has the experience to meet your needs as an investor and who is knowledgeable about the types of properties you want to buy. A good broker or agent can play an important part in your investing success. Finding one or two good brokers or agents is of the utmost importance and should rank high on your list of resources to develop. Specifically, you need to find a realtor with access to the multiple listing service who specializes in or knows rental property. He or she should generally be familiar with financing, knowledgeable about market trends, and above all, have a good attitude toward creative financing. It also wouldn't hurt if your favorite and most helpful broker or agent were also familiar with the principles I teach in this course. It might even be worth your while to purchase a copy of this course to further educate your broker or agent. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of finding brokers or agents who are trained in and have a positive attitude toward creative real estate finance. When you look for brokers or agents, try to find brokers or agents who own or have purchased investment properties for themselves. In most jurisdictions, local board policy and or state law prevents licensees, that is, licensed brokers or agents, from using any contract form that is not specifically designated for their use. Even though the sales contracts I give you in the Real Estate Forms Portfolio and the Real Estate Toolkit are legal in all 50 states, if a licensee tells you that he or she cannot use my contract because it is not an approved form, there may be a way around the dilemma. Simply prepare the offer yourself and remind the licensee that it's okay for the form to be used because you prepared it and you're not a licensee. If the licensee does not permit you to prepare the offer, simply instruct the person to incorporate your revisions into the required state contract form. Traditionally, real estate brokers or agents represent sellers. However, you can contract with a broker or agent to represent you as the buyer, and that person is then referred to as a buyer's broker or agent. On the other side of the coin from a buyer's broker or agent is the listing broker or agent. Listing brokers or agents work on behalf of the seller, and many of them are reluctant to think creatively about financing. Many of them are afraid that if they present a creative no-money-down offer to a seller, the seller will react negatively towards them, and they might be accused of operating contrary to the seller's best interest. As a matter of fact, as I explain in the chapters on developing creative financing techniques and using creative financing techniques, the seller benefits from a creatively financed transaction just as the buyer does. So in circumstances like these, when you write an offer on a property, just add the words, "Buyer reserves the right to accompany broker or agent to present offer." Now, many brokers or agents will react negatively to that clause, but usually a simple reminder that state law in all 50 states allows you to do this will be sufficient. And this is true unless a seller states that they want all offers to be presented by their broker or agent. Discussing this point carefully with the broker or agent should be enough to gain some cooperation. Always make it a point to drive on your own to the seller's office or home. Arrive early and wait for the broker or agent before you actually go in to talk to the seller. Be courteous to all parties. For example, I always begin by saying, "Your broker or agent has been nice enough to allow me to present this offer and explain how we will both benefit." That way, even though I may be there against the wishes of the broker agent, by complimenting them, I have started the meeting on a positive note. Sooner or later, you will probably find yourself wondering if maybe you should become a broker or agent yourself. Whether you should become a broker or agent depends on your goals and on the requirements in your state. If you're planning on using this course only to learn how to buy your own residence or perhaps a few investment properties, then you don't need to invest the time and effort required to become licensed. However, if you plan on making a career of real estate investing, you should certainly give some consideration to becoming a broker or agent. In most states, you'll need to complete a prescribed real estate course before you can take the state's exam to become licensed. Many of the larger real estate brokerage companies offer these classes, or you can take an inexpensive class taught by a local junior college. Upon passing the state test, you must be affiliated with a licensed real estate broker in order to earn commissions. To become a broker, as opposed to a salesperson, you generally must be affiliated with a broker for a period of time, such as 1 year, take specified courses, and then pass the broker's examination. There are advantages and disadvantages to becoming a broker or an agent. The advantages include the fact that you will learn about a variety of real estate-related topics when you take the required classes, some of which can help you with your investing. More important, though, if you're an agent, you can work for or become affiliated with a broker. This may afford you access to the MLS and enable you to earn commissions when you buy and sell properties, or when you help someone else buy and sell a property. Also, you might receive more respect from other brokers and agents you deal with in your investing. It's an interesting fact that if you should ask a broker or agent to cut his or her commission when buying the property, they're against it or offended. However, if you're a licensee yourself and you ask to split the commission, they're very willing to do so. The disadvantage of becoming a broker includes the time and cost of attending classes and the fact that, by law, you will need to identify yourself as a licensee when you're trying to buy or sell property. This is usually not a problem, but it can make some unsophisticated sellers worry of you as a professional investor. Finally, you might be restricted in the real estate forms you're permitted to use. Surveyors. When you use a bank or other institutional lender to borrow money for acquiring real estate, a survey might be required. In general, I do not employ a surveyor unless I'm using one of these sources for funds. However, for what it's worth, my attorney has repeatedly told me that he would never acquire a property without having a survey done. The surveyor's job is to physically define the boundaries of the property. Putting stakes in the ground marks the boundaries. In the process of the survey, any encroachment by a neighbor's building or fence would show up. Similarly, if any part of the improvements to the property you're acquiring is encroaching on a neighbor's property or located on an easement, it will be discovered as well. I have found surveyors to be somewhat flexible in the fees they charge, especially if you have an old survey you can provide them. I've learned they also can be a valuable source of information about local properties. Surveyors generally work in one geographical area or region for many years, and in the course of doing so, they pick up a lot of gossip, a lot of trade talk, and tidbits of information and facts about properties and property owners. Developing a relationship with a surveyor can result in learning information about a property you're trying to acquire, as well as other properties in the area that you might not otherwise know. Aside from the professionals I've just described who are directly involved in the real estate business, you should also try to develop relationships with non-real estate business contacts. Such contacts are people who can help you either by giving you some insight when it comes to complying with local codes, providing information about properties, or providing funds to help you invest. For example, every unit of local government employs inspectors whose job it is to make sure that regulations and codes are enforced. Since these inspectors are human beings, they operate with the same prejudices, the same biases, and the same subjectivities that accompany all areas of human endeavor. That is to say, while they cannot ignore the written codes and regulations that they were hired to enforce, they do have the power to make their own interpretation of the codes and regulations, or to extend time for compliance. As in all areas of life, people are willing to let out a little bit more rope to those they like and respect. Make sure you're one of those who are liked and respected by your city and county inspectors. The building and fire departments have inspectors too, and developing a relationship with these people can also work to your advantage. Start by personally making contact with these departments to learn the names of their field inspectors. Ask them to make you aware of any codes or regulations that apply when buying a property. Employees in all departments of your county courthouse can be invaluable to you and their ability to quickly generate information about a property in which you're interested. Information available through the courthouse includes the age of the property, its size, any additions to the property since it was built, the assessed value, the taxes, mortgages or other liens that may exist, and ownership information. Of course, as I said earlier, you can also get this information for most properties quickly, 24 hours a day, at my website, carltonsheets.com. You should also keep an eye out for potential partners. If you pick 100 people at random and ask the question, do you agree that real estate is the greatest wealth builder in the world and that more fortunes have been made in real estate than anything else, I'm confident that you would receive at least 90 affirmative replies. Why, then, don't more people become involved in real estate investing? The answers are simple. Time, money, they think, credit, they think, lack of knowledge, and fear. Everyone who responded affirmatively to your question is a potential property investment partner with you, and you'll find them everywhere. Because of the enormous role that a partnership can play in putting you on a fast track to success, I devote an entire chapter of this course to the subject. Suffice it to say at this point that you should be constantly quizzing people about their interest and ability to join you in a real estate transaction. While you're doing this, you'll naturally be touting the benefits of real estate investing. Finally, when you're thinking of people who can serve as resources for your investing career, don't forget about other investors. Not only can they provide information and leads, they can also encourage you when you need it. You should also consider developing a network of people who can serve as your eyes and ears in looking for investment opportunities. I call these kinds of people networkers, or bird dogs as they're sometimes known. Many investors are fearful about forming close relationships with others in the same business because they're afraid that they might divulge information that could help the competition. I could write a book about how self-limiting this approach is. Rather than thinking about other investors as being competitors, you should think about them as partners, as mentors, as motivators, or buyers and sellers. Okay, let's recap the material I've covered in this audio chapter. To succeed as a real estate investor, you need to find a space to work and equip yourself with the tools and resources of the trade. Tools include a telephone, a pad of paper and something to write with, a weekly planner, and possibly even a fax machine. If you have a computer, you can access the internet and its wealth of investment information. There are three main types of resources that you'll need to tap into in your investing career. 1, sources of information. 2, business resources. And 3, people. Typical sources of information include print and electronic medium sources like newspapers, periodicals, and the internet. Business resources include building services and property and contract services, such as management companies and title companies. And last, people resources include professional contacts such as lawyers and accountants, business contacts, for example, potential partners, and personal contacts. Like any professional, a seasoned investor is a person who has the knowledge, experience, and materials to do the job required of them. In this case, the job of finding properties and sellers and using creative real estate investing techniques to create wealth. One day, you'll be a seasoned investor, but you can act like one right from the start. By doing so, you're accelerating your progress along the path.